Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 So, it is with great happiness that we are back here with you wonderful devotees, myself and Vishnupriya Mataji. We're very happy, there she is back there. We're very happy to be here with all of you nice devotees. We're so much in this mood of Krishna consciousness. Actually, there is nothing so wonderful and sublime as Krishna consciousness. It is the greatest opulence. It is the greatest wealth. There is nothing so wonderful as Krishna consciousness. If you have Krishna consciousness, you don't need anything else, really. You don't need money. You don't need fame. You don't need a sex partner. If you have Krishna consciousness, you've got everything, actually. So, this is the great mercy of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, that He has come as the most confidential messenger of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to give us the greatest thing, Krishna consciousness. And He also gave us this wonderful day known as Ram Navami. This day when we celebrate the appearance of Lord Ram within this world. So there's a very nice shloka in this connection of Lord Ram and the various incarnations of Krishna given in the Brahma Samhita. Ramad Ramadi Murtishu Kala Niyamena Tishtam Nana Vataramakarod Bhuvaneshu Kintu Krishna Svayam Samabhavat Parama Pumanyo Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Vajami. Which means, I worship Govinda, the primeval Lord, who manifested Himself personally as Krishna, and the different avatars in the world in the forms of Ram, Shringa, Vamana, etc., as His subjective portions. Prabhupada quoted this verse on two occasions when he began giving a lecture on Ram Navami, so I thought it appropriate to follow in Prabhupada's footsteps and also to quote this verse at the beginning of a Ram Navami lecture, because this establishes who is Lord Ram, and it also emphasizes the importance of Lord Ram, because in this verse, in Sanskrit language, when you have Adi, it oftentimes means etc. Like in English, I don't know in Finnish language, you know, and so on and so on and so on. So Ram Adi means Ram etc. or Ram and so on and so on and so on. So even though in the verse only the name of Ram is given, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur, who has translated this verse, he mentions Ram, Nrisinga, Vamana, etc. So actually, this term Ram Adi could be expanded unlimitedly. You could just start listing them, and if you had sufficient realization, you could actually go on for all of eternity, listing this expansion and that expansion, because actually, how many are there? They're unlimited. You could go on for all of eternity naming one form of God after another one and never repeat yourself. Always a new one that's never been mentioned before. You could go on for all of eternity. But at the head of this vast list of the expansions of Lord Krishna is Lord Ram. Of course, Ram can also refer to Balaram. But in this particular verse, Srila Bhakti Sena Sarasvati has chosen to translate Ram directly as Ram, or Ramachandra, we usually understand. So this particular incarnation of Krishna is indeed, his pastimes are very, very wonderful. Very, very wonderful pastimes. Krishna, of course, we know he appeared in Mathura, which is, you know, about 90 miles from Delhi. So Lord Ram, he appeared in Ayodhya, 500 miles northwest of Delhi. Northeast of Delhi, 500 miles. The time, Prabhupada explains, about in the Treta Yuga, about 2 million years ago. So his appearance is very, very far back in what we would call nowadays antiquity. Now some people will say, well, how you can say that Krishna is the supreme when Ram came first? Because Krishna came 5,000 years ago and Ram came 2 million years ago. So Ram must be first and Krishna. But that is not a very valid argument, because that simply describes their appearance here in this world. In the original spiritual sky, Krishna is first. As confirmed in the Bhagavad Gita, Aham Sarvasya Prabhavo Matak Sarvam Pravartate. Krishna says, I am the source of all material and spiritual worlds. Everything emanates from me. So Krishna has affirmed that actually he is the original form. And that's, of course, verified by Lord Brahma as well. Anadir adir govinda sarva karana karanam. He is the origin of everything. He has no other origin. But Ram, his origin is Krishna. There's a difference. Krishna is the origin of Ram. It's not that Ram is the origin of Krishna. No. Now some people will say, well, okay, what's the origin of Krishna? We many times have heard that question asked. And one poet, an Irish poet, asked Prabhupada that question also. You know, what is the origin of Krishna? But God means he has no origin. The original personality of God, it has no origin. It has the meaning of God. If he has some origin, then that origin, that is God. So we have to understand there is such a thing as the origin. And, I mean, it's not difficult, because even the scientists admit there is an origin. They want to know, what is the origin of the universe? They're trying to make research. Well, is it a Big Bang? And, you know, what came before the Big Bang? You see? So whether you're a theist or an atheist, everyone admits there's an origin. Everyone agrees there's an origin. But what is the nature of that origin? That is understood differently. So here we can see that person who's an expansion of that person who's the origin of everything is indeed a person. He's not, you know, he's not a mythological figure, simply a, you know, a poetic device used to help us fix our minds on the impersonal Brahman. Some argue that the, you know, the original Brahman is nirguna, has no qualities. They say there's two types of Brahman. There's nirguna Brahma and saguna Brahman. That the nirguna Brahman is the original Brahman, and this material existence, which is a manifestation of that original Brahman, is saguna Brahman. But this is completely incorrect understanding. There's no such thing as something that doesn't have qualities. Everything has qualities. There's no such thing as qualitylessness. So the idea of nirguna Brahman therefore has to mean that he has no material quality. So this is the nature, quality of Lord Ram, that he is completely devoid of material qualities, and he is saguna, he is full of all spiritual qualities. So anyway, 2 million years ago, King Dasharath, he had contracted some disease of the finger. It's called whiplo. I don't, I'm not familiar, I'm not a doctor, but he had some disease. So his queen Kaikeyi was very much, Kaikeyi was very helpful to him in this condition. And he felt so indebted to her that he said, whatever I can give you, whatever boon you like, I will grant it to you. She said, I will take it later on. Of course, we all know the story. And then her son was not in line to take over the throne. Her son being younger, she was envious of the elder queen's son, Ram, getting the throne and not her own son. So she thought to capitalize on this boon just the night before the coronation. You can imagine what kind of devastation this was, because all the arrangements had been made. The whole Ayodhya was completely decked out with decorations. I mean, in those days, when they decorated, they decorated. I mean, Ayodhya was unbelievably decorated. The night before, everybody's off. Everyone loves Ram. Everyone's so excited, so enlivened. Everyone's happy except for Kaikeyi and that hunchback, you see, who put the evil thought in her brain. But just see, this proves that Ram, on the word of his father, is willing to completely walk away from the whole thing. And see, this proves he's God. Actually proves that he's God. It is given by Parashurama Muni, there are six qualities of understanding God. He is unlimited in his power, his beauty, his renunciation, his knowledge, his wealth, and his fame. And in these six qualities, the Lord is unequal. So who can equal the renunciation of Lord Ram? Who can come anywhere close? You know, the whole kingdom worships and adores him. The whole coronation is about ready to take place. Everything's all set. He could have said, well, you know, Father, you know, this is just a, you know, less intelligent woman who, you know, gave you, you should just ignore this. I mean, you know, this. He could have done that. He could have said that. But he said, no, Father, whatever instruction you give me, I will do that. It was a shock, of course. Complete shock. It was complete devastation. It ripped the hearts apart of all the citizens of Ayodhya. Just ripped them apart. But Lord Ram was firm in his sense of duty. Just as his father was dutiful to keep the promise he had made to Kaikeyi, Ram was similarly dutiful to execute the instruction given to him by his father. Where is such a conception of duty in the modern day world? How many people have made the marriage vow until death do us part? You see? And they parted, you know, 2 years later, went off for another one and another one. Where is the spirit of duty? In fact, this is a big problem in our ISKCON. So many divorces. Actually, you know what our divorce rate should be in ISKCON? Zero. Because we are establishing Vedic culture here. We have to show the ideal example for the world society. So our divorce rate should be zero. And our brahmacharis and sannyasis, their fall down rate should be zero. Our gurus fall down. This all should be done, brought to the point of zero. And how? We have to study. What is the character and qualities of Maharaj Dasharath and Lord Ram? How dedicated they were to doing their duty, even if it was intolerable to execute that duty. Still, because it doesn't matter. Duty is duty. Tolerable or intolerable, it doesn't matter. So in this way, Ram accepted. And then who is the next one who shows ideal duty? Who's the next in line? Of course, there's Lakshman. And then there is Sita also. They are all showing duty. Sita had grown up in the king's palace. You see? But no, she wants to go with her husband. Even if it means sleeping in the in the hard soil with rocks and thorns and in danger of being attacked by wild animals or by rakshasas. Doesn't matter to her. She's simply, in the Vedic culture, the wife, she's simply like the shadow of the husband, that's all. Wherever the husband goes, the wife follows, no question, just like the shadow follows. Wherever we go, she follows the husband. Of course, nowadays, if we talk like that, they will say, how draconian, I mean, how barbaric, you see, that the wife would follow the husband like a shadow, you know, must have been slavery, you know. They were so cruel that they, you know, brainwashed the women into becoming slaves, you see, using psychology and pressure. But no, it wasn't like that. On the other side, see how dedicated Ram was to Sita. You see, just by being kidnapped, he destroyed the, he wiped out Ravana, his entire family. He annihilated the whole family of Ravana. Even though he had no facility. You see, because of the vow of going to the forest, he couldn't go back to Ayodhya and grab all the soldiers. There was a huge army in Ayodhya. Huge army. He could have gone back to Ayodhya and grabbed the army. Okay, let's go get that Ravana. But he had taken the vow to go to the forest. So therefore he had to use monkeys instead of soldiers. Monkeys, you know, and logs and rocks. Defeat this huge, powerful army. But anyway, see, the real position, the wife was so dedicated to the husband because the husband was so dedicated to protecting the wife also. And the dedication was because they were both very, very dedicated to doing their duty to each other. The husband to protect the wife and the wife to follow the husband. The husband actually, in Vedic culture, is the leader. He shows the example of risking anything and everything to protect his wife. And then the wife seeing what great dedication, seeing the example of the dedication of the husband, then is out of love, is very happily engaged in following him in any condition. Prabhupada gives the example. And actually my godbrother also two days ago in Cologne, my godbrother and I were talking, and he has just seen also, he just came back from India, the same example that Prabhupada had given, a beggar and his wife. Prabhupada says, even the beggar has a happy family life. Because the wife is serving him very nicely, even they're just sleeping on the side of the road under a piece of plastic or something. She's totally dedicated to serving the husband nicely in any condition. So this is the spirit we need to have in our ISKCON. The husbands have to be very dedicated, completely dedicated to protecting their wives. In this way, the wives will become very, very inspired to follow the husband in any condition. Whatever the husband's services, they will just follow the husband at that service. And very happy just to follow the husband. So this is a very good lesson we can learn from the pastime of Lord Mahavira. So of course, after a great ordeal and so many trials and tribulations, they were successful in bringing back. Sita was indeed brought back. The demon Ravana was killed, and Ram became, you know, resituated in Ayodhya as king. It's a very joyful thing for all the citizens when Ram came back. In those days, the duty was also not just among the royal family to each other, but the king took the duty for the citizens also, each and every citizen. The king took responsibility. Actually, there was one point during the government of Lord Ram where one man, his son, died before he did. You see, the normal thing is the father dies first, and then the son, the older person, will die first for the laws of nature. Then later on, the young person becomes old and he dies. But in this case, the son died before the father, which is unnatural. So this person came to Lord Ram. In those days, The government, the king was available. If there was any complaint, the citizen could directly approach the king and complain. See, nowadays, there's no way you can bring your complaint to the head of state. They'll send you to some office, they'll send you to another office, to another office, to another office, and you never get satisfied anywhere. You see, that's called modern-day government. But in those days, you could directly approach the king with your complaint, and actually, very rarely did anyone complain. The king was so perfect in his administration that rarely would anyone complain. But this citizen complained, and Ram actually took responsibility for that. And there's another nice pastime of Lord Ram. There was one Brahmana who was so dedicated to Lord Ram. This was actually, he was back in the, ruling. But he made a vow that until I have Ram's darshan every day, I will fast. But then Ram had to go out of Ayodhya for some time, for a couple of weeks or a month. And you know what this Brahmin did? He completely fasted the entire time that Ram was gone. So when Ram heard about this, via Lakshman, there was a deity. This is an amazing thing. This shows that Ram, Ram really was God, because before Ram even appeared in the family of Maharaj Ikshvaku, from whose dynasty Ram appeared, they were actually worshipping a deity of Lord Ram even before he appeared. Of course, he had appeared in previous, it's not the first time he appeared. So Ram was known even before he appeared, because the family of Maharaj Ikshvaku was worshipping a deity of Ram. So that deity had been handed down through the royal families, and it had actually come to Maharaj Dhatarath, and now it was in a closet actually in the palace at the time that Ram was ruling. So when he heard about this Brahmin who was fasting every day because he wasn't getting the darshan, he brought the deity out of the closet and gave it to the Brahmin so he could get his darshan every day in front of the deity. And that deity actually has been passed down for 2 million years. And I don't know how long it was passed down from Maharaj Ikshvaku to the time of Dasharatha and Ram, but since that time it was passed down for 2 million years, and that deity is still being worshipped today in South India. You see, I don't know the name of the temple or the city, but this is amazing stuff here, the pastimes of Ram. You see, amazing, amazing stuff. And you may say, well, this is all to help us, you see. Yada yada hi dharmasya glanir bhavati bharata abhyuttamam dharmasya tadatmanam shujanyaha. This is all the kindness of Krishna. He comes directly as Krishna, he comes as Ram, he comes as Nrisimha, he comes as Vamana, he comes as Matsya, he comes as Kurma, he comes as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he sends his pure devotees like Srila Prabhupada, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. This is all the unlimited mercy of Krishna for us, his children. You see, we are lost children. That's what we are. We are children who somehow got separated from our home and we're lost. We're wandering in this vast jungle of Helsinki. You see? Who am I? What's going on, You ever been I know sometimes in America the department stores are so big. Probably the same thing here. I haven't gone in. But, some child would get separated from his parents in the department store. And, the security guard will find a child crying all alone. So they'll take him up to the front, get on the speaker system, They'll ask the child his name. They'll say, and they'll make an announcement. Your child is up here at the front. Please come to the information desk and reclaim your child. So we're like that. We're like children wandering around this vast department store of the material world. We got separated from our father, Krishna. And we're just crying in this material existence. We're suffering and crying in this material existence. But the spiritual master, he rescues us. And he reconnects us with Krishna. It's like in the department store, the security guard finds the child and he reconnects the child to the parent. So So the spiritual master finds us loitering in this material world, or his representative, you see, the book distributor, the preacher, who represent the spiritual master. You see? And then, so they reconnect that living entity. This is called Sankirtan. You see? Sankirtan means reconnecting the lost soul with his or her father. That is the real meaning of Sankirtan. Sankirtan movement of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is to reconnect everyone with their original father, Krishna, Ram. So, we are very much blessed by these days because they give us the opportunity to engage in Lila Smarana, remembering the wonderful pastimes of the Supreme Personality of God. Simply by remembering those activities, one begins actually to enter into the spiritual atmosphere. And if one becomes perfect in that Lila Smaranam, in that remembrance, then you can actually enter into the pastimes of Krishna. Some people say, well, you know, you shouldn't meditate on Ram's Lila because then you won't go to Golok, you might go to, you know, Yoga in the spiritual world. But this is a bogus philosophy. All the pastimes of Krishna are glorious, whether it's Krishna, Ram, Nrisimha, Varaha. Prabhupada has taught us what is the standard system that we are to follow. We are to meditate on all the pastimes of Krishna. Krishna in Vrindavan, Krishna in Dwarka, Krishna in Mathura. I mean, what can be more enlivening than Krishna chopping off the head of the washerman? Because he wouldn't hand over the clothes of the king to Krishna and the cowherd boys. Krishna, off with your head. All of these pastimes are very sweet and very wonderful. Whether it's Krishna kissing the gopis or the washerman getting his head chopped off, you know, having a washerman's head rolling down the street. They're all glorious, all of these pastimes. And by all of these remembrances, we will actually purify our hearts and qualify ourselves to re-enter the eternal pastimes of Krishna according to whatever our relationship with Krishna is. That we will regain. Whatever our natural, original relationship with Krishna is, any pastime of any Vishnu Tattva is purifying our heart and qualifying us to regain our original swarup, our original identity in the spiritual world. So, I thought at this point we can ask if anyone has any questions. We'll be happy to try to answer them for you. Anyone has any questions? Yeah.
Well, Prabhu, what the deity that was given to this Brahmana, was it
Ram? Deity of Ram.
Yeah. Was it from where was it from the last time?
It was worshipped at the time of Maharaj Ikshvaku and handed down. So it's millions of years old deity. If we find out where that is, we can go and take darshan. That'd be very nice. If we can find out where is that deity in South India, we can go. Make a pilgrimage. We can all go there together. Get a big tour bus, you know. Go see. And I'll meet in Mayapur and get a tour bus and go down. When Tathagat feels the time is right, we can all go and have that darshan and that deity. That'd be really a transcendental excursion. Get the special mercy of Lord Ram. Yes.
It is in the Krishnamurti in Udupi.
It's in Udupi?
Yes.
That's where it is.
Yeah, like this floor.
Ah, is that big? You've seen. You've had the darshan.
Yeah, I have.
We have to take the dust of your feet, though.
Yeah.
He has had the darshan of Ram. Someone may say, well, it's just a deity. And that's atheism. Okay? Everyone knows the story of Gauridas Pandit and the Gaurinitai deities. You should never think that the deity is just a deity. That's atheism. there was that lila when Gauranitai was visiting the home of Gauridas Pandit. And when Gauranitai, Chaitanya Prabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Nityananda Prabhu, when they're leaving the home of Gauridas Pandit, Gauridas is saying, "My Lord, I cannot bear your separation." Of course, he also had Gauranitai deities on his altar. He said, "My dear Lord, I cannot bear your separation. Please do not leave. Do not leave my house. I cannot bear the separation. Please do not leave." You see, with great emotion, he was begging Gauranitai, "You please stay in my home at least a few more days. You see, please, please." They said, "What do you mean? We are staying. Do you not see? There we are. We are on your altar." He said, "But those are deities. I want you personally to stay here." I said, "Oh, okay, no problem." So Gauranitai went and got on the altar, stood there, and the deities walked off the altar to leave the house. "We'll stay, okay, no problem." They went and stood on the altar and froze as deities. And as they were, as the deities who became, you know, walking, talking deities, walked out of the house, Gauridas Pandit ran, "My Lord, please don't leave. Please don't leave. Please stay." He said, "But we're there on the altar. But those are deities. I'm on you personally here." So Lord Chaitanya looked and said, "Well, okay, no problem." They went back. They stood back on the altar. And then the deities came off the altar and walked out of the house. So the same thing was going again and again and again. And finally, Gauridas Pandit lost track of who was who. Which one had been the deity and which... So the whole point is, we should never think the deity is a, simply, you know, a stone statue. Here you have the most beautiful deities of Gauranitai in the entire world, actually. Do you know them? These are the most beautiful Gauranitai deities in the entire world. And they have come here to bless you. That this place is the spiritual world. Wherever they're being worshipped, that place is the spiritual world. So anyway, any other questions? Questions? Yes.
Thank you. Recently bought the Ramayana.
I'm half deaf, so speak up. Speak up.
Yes, I recently bought a Ramayana with the nice paintings of Sharma.
You read the Ramayana, you're saying? What's she saying?
I recently bought...
You bought it, okay.
...with nice paintings of Sharma, the painter.
The paintings of Sharma.
As a painting of...
illustration.
You brought an illustrated Ramayana, okay.
Yeah.
What's the question?
It's just okay. A couple of little questions from that. First of all, this Isle of Lanka, I have always thought that this Isle of Lanka would mean... Sri Lanka, but I have heard,
yes, it is,
some while ago that it is.
No, it is. The current island of Lanka is the Lanka in from the Ramayana. Same place.
I think I understood wrongly.
Someone told you it wasn't?
Yes, some devotee.
Some devotee said? That's new information to me, because I've always heard that it was the same place. So... someone heard information that that wasn't really the real Lanka. Has anyone heard that? I've never heard that.
It is saying there.
Hmm?
It's saying that it's west of Sri Lanka.
That the actual Lanka was sunk into the sea or something like that?
Something like that.
Yeah, I have. It's new to me.
New person.
There
new
was
to me.
Seminar in Sri Lanka, VIHC last, you know, Jutakarma was giving that. He couldn't. There are different options, you know, they said. There are different options, you know. Sometimes Prabhupada's comments indicate Brazil, but it's not actually exactly, you know, then Brazil is mentioned there. Then there is actually some other direction they are looking over the Lanka, you know, which could be like under the sea, and then Lanka. So it's ultimately these three options, at least in Uttakarma's seminar was mentioned. But
think about whole seminar, so it's not, there's different opinions on it. So what? So my opinion is we should simply see what Prabhupada had said and take that opinion.
Prabhupada said Brazil, Ravana used to get the gold from Brazil
yeah.
to build his Lanka.
Yeah, that was another matter. That's something, another point. Yeah.
But
Yeah, I can. If you give me your email address, I can do. I can look in the Veda base and see what Prabhupada said about that, and give you what Srila Prabhupada said. Or if you're here tomorrow, I mean, I'll be happy to look that up. I'd be curious to know myself what Prabhupada directly said about it, because that's the most authoritative thing. Whatever Prabhupada directly said, that's the most authoritative. That is the authoritative thing.
It seems that it was not directly asked from him, you know. It was just like a different, like she mentioned about Ravana, you know, the person was mentioned, but at least according to that seminar, it seems that it was not directly asked from him.
What is that?
It seems that it was not directly asked from Srila Prabhupada.
Yeah. Well, there's a similar question about Dwarka. Of course, the modern-day city of Dwarka, they found a submerged city. Of course, there's a story of that going under the water. So, yeah. So, in any case, whether the present-day Lanka is the exact site of the pastime of Lord Ram or it's somewhere else, doesn't really alter the fact that those pastimes did, in fact, take place, and that by remembering those pastimes that you can purify your heart of all the contamination which is keeping you entangled in the cycle of birth and death and go back to your original identity in the spiritual world. You see? It's, either way, it doesn't alter the most important fact, which is what we have to focus on. Yes?
I was going to say, according to what NASA has found, the stone bridge, Adam's Bridge they call it, that goes to Sri Lanka, which is there. So that original bridge is...
Well, that's some evidence, because NASA, with their aerial photographs, actually found out that they saw the submerged bridge. And it does go to the current-day Lanka. So according to NASA photographs... I mean, I've seen the photograph. I've seen the photograph also. You can see there's something under the water. There's actually a stone bridge. You can see it from the aerial photograph. You know, from the satellites down on the earth, you can see it. And that goes to Lanka. So there's one vote in favor of the current day Lanka. So anyway, it's an interesting controversy. Just make sure you're chanting Hare Krishna while you investigate the controversy. Then you'll be okay.
Yes, Prabhupada, you mentioned that Prabhupada is the most confidential authority we can hear from.
Oh, yes. Who was more empowered to spread Krishna consciousness all over the world in the history of the world? There has never been an Acharya who was empowered like Prabhupada, and he is unique amongst all of Lord Chaitanya's followers. That's a fact.
So, did he see directly these pastimes? So he could like have direct. He could see directly what's there and what's not. So is it?
Did Prabhupada directly see the pastimes of Krishna?
Or is it because of that, or is it because of like that his acharya we have to follow? Or is it that he could himself see everything that was?
Well, Prabhupada has the ability to directly see every single pastime of Krishna and Lord Chaitanya. Absolutely, yes. Prabhupada explains that there is a mystic television within the heart. Mm-hmm. When you achieve pure bhakti, then you can actually directly watch television in your heart. You know, you can watch the pastimes of Lord Chaitanya, you can watch the pastimes of Krishna, you can see all the leelas going on. It's not that they happen in the past and they're not happening now, they are called nitya leela. Every single pastime of Krishna and Lord Chaitanya is happening right now. And if you become self-realized, fully self-realized devotee like Prabhupada, then you can actually see everything that's going on. You can see, you can directly perceive all the pastimes of Krishna within your heart. And then you know. Devotee, we offer Vishadam to the deities because Prabhupada told us that Krishna will take it. The problem is that I can see how Krishna is actually eating the Vishadam. Prabhupada said that. So, when you come to the level of Prabhupada's realization, you see, pure bhakti, pure Krishna consciousness, then you will see. I mean, Prabhupada wants us to come to that level. Many times mentioned this. I always keep repeating this because it's very potent. Prabhupada personally ordered me in a letter. He said, now you just qualify yourself to see Krishna face to face. Direct order from Prabhupada to me. He instructed me I had to be qualified to directly see Krishna face to face. So was I some special devotee that got a special order? No. I was just a rank and file brahmachari, scrubbing the pots in the kitchen, going out and preaching on the college campus. I was just a rank and file unknown brahmachari, and Prabhupada gave me that instruction. So that means that instruction is for everyone. Each and every one of us, Prabhupada wants us to become so pure that we can see Krishna face to face. Every one of us. Prabhupada wants us to come to that position of complete purity. If you come to that point, you can also see the pastimes too. No problem. You can directly see. How do these great acharyas give such detailed descriptions of what's going on in Krishna's pastimes? How do they give commentaries on the 10th canto which go into little tiny details that are not mentioned in the 10th canto? Because they could directly perceive it with their realization. They weren't making something up. They could directly perceive these things. So any other questions? Yes.
Prabhu, how is it with the reciprocation with the deity that how are we connected with them?
Ah, this is a very nice question, he went. Avadutta Chandra Das Brahmachari has asked a very nice question. How to reciprocate with Gauranga's mercy, you see? That's a very nice question. Prabhupada has explained that Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is in anxiety. He is in a state of anxiety. Why? Because his beloved children have become separated from their internal activities in the spiritual world and they are rotting in the cycle of birth and death. He's in a state of great anxiety over them. So, those persons who will, just like the gopis are willing to relieve Krishna's headache by giving the dust from their feet, those who are very dedicated to Lord Chaitanya, they want to relieve Lord Chaitanya of his transcendental anxiety by spreading this Krishna consciousness movement to every man, woman, and child in this world. They want to make everyone a devotee. Because each and every man, each and every woman, each and every child which is not engaged in pure Krishna bhakti is causing anxiety to the heart of Lord Chaitanya. So the dedicated followers of Lord Chaitanya, they have dedicated their lives to relieving Lord Chaitanya of this anxiety he's going through. So if you want to reciprocate the unlimited mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, then you must dedicate yourself to the Sankirtan mood of delivering the fallen conditioned souls of this world from their suffering in the cycle of birth and death and bringing them back to their eternal relationship with Lord Sri Krishna and Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. That's the answer. You have to preach. You have to distribute this Krishna consciousness to everyone. That's the way you reciprocate with the love of Lord Chaitanya. Yes.
Prabhu, if we are preaching, so we are not always so inspired, but it's more like a routine. So how to then be more inspired?
How do you get off the mechanical platform and come to the realized platform? Well, this is also a very good question. We have our morning program, which also we tend to take mechanically. Yeah, time for Tulsi worship, Yani, Kani, Chapapani, Brahma, Tada, Kani, Chadan, We have a tendency to do that, not only with preaching, but also with our service, our puja, our service, just mechanically do it. Yeah, I got to offer an RT. We have a tendency to do that. This is why acharyas are so very important. This is why I meditate when I'm offering an arti, especially when I'm offering an arti to Prabhupada, which I love to do in Guru Puja. I remember that day I stood there and watched Prabhupada offering arti to Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati Thakur. I guarantee you, Prabhupada was not waving a stick. Although externally he was doing that. Prabhupada was on a much deeper, deeper level. He was open, he was pouring his heart out. He was pouring his loving feelings to his Guru Maharaj. It really boils down to that. You have to give your love to Krishna. You have to give your love to your spiritual master. You see. You have to think, let me do this to please Lord Krishna. Let me do this to please Srila Prabhupada. Let me do this to please my spiritual master. You have to pray to do it with love. My dear Lord, my dear Srila Prabhupada, my dear Guru Maharaj, now I'm doing this service on your order, but it seems mechanical. My dear Lord, please bless me that I can actually do it with feeling. We might even do it begrudgingly, that I don't want to do this, but my authority said I have to do this. And we might even do it with a very negative feeling sometimes. I don't want to scrub this pot. I don't want to be out here on book distribution. I don't want to be cleaning the toilet. See, we have to understand your attitude of how you do your service will make you or it'll break you. If you have a negative or even a neutral attitude about your service, you're in trouble. You're in trouble. You have to cultivate a very positive, loving mood in all of your devotional activities. This is extremely important. Bhaktya, with devotion. What does Krishna say? Patram pushpam balam dayam yo me bhaktya prayachati. He doesn't say, if you offer me a leaf or flower, fruit or water, I will accept. He doesn't say that. He says, bhaktya, if you offer me a leaf, flower, fruit or water with love and devotion, then I will accept it. Krishna doesn't need your leaf. He doesn't need your crummy flower, He doesn't need your, your mango full of stringy mango, He doesn't need your polluted water. He wants your love. That's what he wants. So therefore, we have to always remember, Krishna wants my love. And I have to learn how to give it to him. Whatever my prescribed duty is, if I'm out preaching, I'm out selling prasadam, if I'm organizing preaching programs, if I'm giving a class, if I'm scrubbing pots, whatever service has been arranged for me by my spiritual master and by Krishna and my temple authorities, I simply have to say, let me do this with love. And let me remember how fortunate I am. I've seen this tendency. It's a very bad tendency that neophyte devotees have. If any of you are neophytes, you might want to consider this point very seriously. Which I think we're all neophytes, including I feel like a neophyte too, actually. Our problem as neophytes is that we take Krishna consciousness for granted. We take it very cheaply, actually. We take devotee association very cheaply. One of our ISKCON members had somehow been serving in Iraq. And when he came back and got the association of devotees, I mean, it was just like, just to see a devotee was like, fact you like seeing Krishna. You know what I mean? Just imagine you're out in Iraq, you know, in constant fear of being killed by, you know, by the insurgents. And then now your tour of duty is over, now you get to go back to, you know, wherever you came from. And you get to go to the temple again and see a devotee. Actually, you get to see a devotee. How much is the saying in English, a sight for sore eyes? In other words, it's just like the sweetest nectar you could possibly experience just to see a devotee. Just to lay your eyes on a devotee. It's the sweetest, most inconceivable nectar. But because we're seeing each other day in and day out, we just think, yeah, so-and-so's kind of ugly, you know. He wears his tilak crooked, you know, if he's even has it on half the time. You know, we start finding faults, you know. So-and-so, you know, they're like this and that. They're not very Krishna conscious, you know. We start minimizing all the devotees, finding their faults. We don't realize how fortunate we are to have the association of devotees. Sadhu Sangha, Sadhu Sangha, Sarva Shastre Kai, Sadhu Sangha Lava Matra, Sarva Siddhi Hui. Chaitanya Charitamrita authoritatively states that the association of a devotee, even for one Lava Matra, 1/11th of a second, is so auspicious. It is so beneficial that 1/11th of a second you can achieve all perfection just by 1/11th of a second association with a sadhu. So we tend to take things for granted in this movement. We don't realize what is the great fortune of being able to scrub the toilet in Krishna's bathroom, in the temple's bathroom. That after millions of lifetimes of rotating in the cycle of birth and death, now I have gotten the opportunity to clean the stool out of the commode in the temple. It's actually the greatest blessing to have that opportunity. So, in India, the mood is that if you're a pujari, then that's a very high position. You know? You're bathing the deities, and that's, you know, very high Brahman. You know? It's the cream of the Vedic culture to be a Brahman. And those who clean the floor, they're low class, you see, untouchable class. Those who clean the floor. So what did Prabhupada say in the Hyderabad temple opening address? You've heard that lecture. He said, whether you're bathing the deity or scrubbing the floor, there is no difference. He said, the temple is the body of Krishna. Don't think otherwise. So whether you're scrubbing the toilet or you're bathing the deity, it's the same thing. That's the point. So we have to learn to take whatever service we've gotten, no matter how menial it may feel to us. You know, I'd rather do this service or that service, and they feel like that. But whatever service Krishna has arranged for us, we should accept that with a heart of gratitude. Thank you, Krishna, for giving me this opportunity to engage in your devotional service. So, are there any other questions? Yeah.
There's many Indian families who still recite Ramayana every evening to their children, and that's really nice. That there was one girl in the class today, and she was
big part.
There's many Indian who
write to their children. Yeah.
Yeah. But at the same time, there's Indian people who say that the Indians are the only nationality that still believe in their mythologies, and so on and so forth. So,
right. So
what to answer to those people? It's at the same time, it's very nice that.
You want to encourage them. It's very nice that you're so. You tell you are from. You can encourage them. You come from the most wonderful beautiful, rich cultural heritage in the entire universe, actually. But my dear sir, if I can beg your tolerance for a moment, and I would like to correct you on the statements you made. You stated that this was mythology. Now, according to the dictionary, mythology means make-believe. It's not a real history. It's just a story that was made up. The actual, nowhere in the Vedic scriptures does it say that the Ramayana is mythology. This idea was introduced into India by the British, who wanted to dismantle the Vedic culture and subjugate the Indian people. So you all were successful under Gandhi's direction to politically expel the British from India, but you have not yet expelled the British influence, because now you have adopted the British attitude that this is mythology. Before the British came, everyone knew this is historical. But now you have not become free of the British influence, who came to teach you that this is only myth, it's not real. That's one thing. Depends on the person. Those are some things that can be said in a very nice way, very sweet way. Actually, the style of how you speak can make a big difference. Prabhupada personally told me, I asked Prabhupada about book distribution actually one time, because I was doing that service, and I thought, well, why not get some tips from Prabhupada himself? He's the acharya. So I asked Prabhupada some questions about book distribution. He said, it's not so much what you say, but how you say it. So we should always see not just the words I'm saying, but the style of delivery. If you show a mood of love and compassion in the way you speak, if that love and that compassion and love comes through in your facial expression, your tone of voice, and your body language, that will be more effective than just giving the philosophical concept. So, anything else? All right, then. We will stop here, and we thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Srila Lord Ramachandra ki jai. Ram Navami ki jai.